Ricky Rubio's a guy that has built for himself a reputation, his last couple stops, of doing whatever you need, making your team better, often coming off the bench as a point guard and being a force for your basketball team. He helped Utah be a markedly better team. He helped that Suns team last year, especially at the end of the year, be a markedly better team. I think this is Minnesota looking around and saying, what can we do and who can we get to try and make that extra push to be what we think we finally are this year, and that's a playoff team.
It's been 4 years since I've been able to do this. So, boys, used to do this on the old Royce and Mackey show. Ricky Rubio!
Oh, I bet Royce loved that.
Felt so good.
I bet that was a hit with Royce.
So good. He's back. He overshadows the number one overall pick. We'll talk about Wolves draft night. We'll get our friend Darren Doogie Wolfson in for some inside information about the Wolves and our Minnesota sports teams. But a quick shout out to Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated's been helping business owners for over 100 years in the state of Minnesota. They throw behind-the-back passes, between-the-legs, no-look passes to business owners with great accuracy, I might add. They're great leaders. They're great team builders. All those things are true about Federated Insurance and Ricky Rubio. And they're always putting community first as well. They've donated 18,000 N95 respirator masks to Owatonna Hospital. So check out the good things that Federated's doing for business owners and for the community at federatedinsurance.com. And remember, at Federated, it's always our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and scorenorth.com.
With the first pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves select Anthony Edwards from the University of Georgia.
I feel like I'm going to fit perfect with those guys because I know Russell likes to play off the ball sometimes, and I can play on the ball. When he wants to play on the ball, I can play off the ball. And Cat is the best three-point shooting big man in the league. So I feel like we can't go wrong with that. A lot of pick and pops, even pick and rolls as such.
Welcome to the show, Mackie and Judd. Wow. Lot to recap. We're going to get to Doogie early on here from Five Eyewitness News and also from the Scoop podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, what's the headline that they drafted Anthony Edwards number one overall, or is the headline that they traded for Ricky Rubio last night?
The headline itself is not even close. Like, down the road, this might completely change. The reacquisition of a guy I consider to be on a second level of fan favorites, right?
Because he's like, not Moss is like,
because he's not Moss. Yeah. He's not Moss. He's not KG. He's not Torrey. But he was definitely, I think, if not loved for a while, close to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
This to me, without, as we sit here on Thursday, there is no competition. They took the top overall pick. It might work out. It might not. I don't know. But if you want Phil Mackey, fan enthusiasm, right? If you want people, as Moss said back in 2010, in this case, getting their number 9 jerseys out of their closet to wear them again someday when fans can return to Wolves games, Ricky Rubio and the reacquisition of him from OKC last night is headline, I think, 1, 2, and 3, and everything else sort of falls in behind that. And I really don't doubt that.
It's amazing.
We love guys coming home.
The Wolves had the number one overall pick last night. And obviously, like, if they had made a blockbuster, you know, for, you know, Russell Westbrook or something like
Sure.
Whatever said, but you would have probably had to use the number one pick. So, sure. So they drafted number one overall, and then making a trade that did not involve the number one overall pick, they do something that completely overshadows the number one overall pick. And I just want to start because you and I have done a show together for almost 7 years now. And so we, you know, Rubio's been gone for 3 seasons, I want to say.
Yeah,
I think 4 years
June
ago.
Of 2017, he was traded to the Suns.
So 3.5 years ago.
Or Jazz, I'm sorry.
And I think, as we may find out in old tweets exposed today, Declan was doing some digging on Ricky Rubio tweets. I was not a big fan of Rubio at the end of his Timberwolves run.
Yeah, it was sort of Cousins-esque of you. You soured because he couldn't shoot.
It wasn't quite like Andrew Wiggins level vitriol.
No. And I don't think you're as tough. To be fair to you, I don't think you are necessarily as consistently as tough on Cousins either. I think Wiggy was his own class. Like, you destroyed him.
And he deserved it.
And I didn't feel like you destroyed Ricky on a consistent basis. His shooting definitely bothered you.
So if I remember correctly, and we'll pull the tweets later in the show. I was more mad because when the notion of trading Rubio sort of popped up, and this is, by the way, when the Golden State Warriors were in a dynasty run shooting threes, and the Wolves had this antiquated offense led by a point guard that you could just sag back in the fourth quarter and let him clank jump shots, and they lost a bunch of games in the fourth quarter during the Ricky Rubio run as point guard. And my frustration was more the people that thought it was sacrilege to consider trading a can't-shoot point guard. And so my frustration was less so, like, Rubio has always been a leader. He's always been a great human being. And my frustration was more like,
guys,
he's like the 16th best point guard in the league. What if they can get, you know, an offense-forward point guard in Jeff Teague, I'm for it. I'm here for it. So there are three reasons why before we get to Doogie here, why I love this move. We can flesh these out later on and we can talk about Doogie. But number one, he's a better player now than he was 5 years ago. He's a better shooter. One of his big things, he couldn't convert at the rim. Like, he would miss layups on a regular basis. Yep. He's still not amazing at the rim, but he's better at the rim. He's better from long distance.
Yep.
I think he's more comfortable in his role as a complimentary player now. There's just less pressure. Like, his career is what it is, and he's comfortable with it, right? Number two, he elevates star players. I texted you this stat last night, Judd, and this thing's kind of gone bonkers on Twitter since I posted this last night. In terms of net points, so plus minus net points, the teammate that elevated Devin Booker the most in Phoenix last year, of all the teammate pairings on the court, mm-hmm. Ricky Rubio, they were a plus 219 last year as a combo.
Interesting.
2 years in Utah, when Donovan Mitchell was on the court with Ricky Rubio, they were plus 500 as a combo. So he elevates star players, and maybe he can do that with Anthony Edwards. Maybe he can do it with D'Lo. And number three, he's a leader and he's mature. And when you have a team full of like 23-year-olds and a 19-year-old, you need a leader who's mature, who's been around. And so, like, my opinion on this would have been far different 4 years ago. I love this move, Jed.
He also, because he comes back now, expectations are completely different. He came here in 2011 after being the fifth pick in the 2009 draft at the age of 21. Basically expected to be part of the savior package, right? Like, he's going to save the Wolves, and they're finally going to make the playoffs again, and he's going to be exciting, and it's going to be great. And he played 6 years here, and that did not happen. He comes back now at 30. He comes back, I think the thing, too, is we have no illusions about him. So it's not like he comes back and we're like, well, you've completely fixed your shot, right?
No.
I think it's improved, but it's also not, oh my God, he can't shoot, and this is a huge problem. It strikes me that Flip loved this kid a lot, right? Tibbs didn't. Ryan does. And I think what Ricky can provide this franchise now, which would be a very important thing, is probably a certain amount of stability. And remember, too, the most important thing to me is this. And you can tell me, well, I don't like this, Judd, and I don't disagree, but it's the truth. It's 2020, and we have now seen who can help guys like Cat, right? Like, if you bring in the alpha, Jimmy Butler, hey, Jimmy Butler's going to – it doesn't work. So Ricky, to me, is certainly not Butler, but he's a 30-year-old veteran player who's been around, who can stabilize. And chemistry in sports, as much as we try and fight this at times, what takes place in the room, what takes place off the court or off the ice or off the field is incredibly important. And so if you're putting this project together and trying to bring stability and guys who can lead, you can't just say, this guy's an alpha and he's going to lead things, because guys like Cat don't respond to it. So I do think that there is both a strategy in this acquisition, Phil, that applies to on the court, but also off the court.
Let's get Dugues in here. Our friend Darren Doogie Wolfson, 5 Eyewitness News and the Scoop Podcast. And by the way, if you're checking us out, Mackie and Judd, either on Score North Radio, or if you're checking us out on our podcast feed, Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com, we also have a new YouTube channel, youtube.com/ScoreNorthMN. It's our second YouTube channel. The other one is our Viking-centric channel, youtube.com/PurpleDailyPodcast. So, quick plug for those. Doogie, who would have thought that the Wolves would have hung on to the number one pick, drafted Anthony Edwards, and then the trade that they make later is the thing that steals headlines times 10, Ricky Rubio.
Good morning, gentlemen. Always appreciate your time. Quick on-air production meeting. I need to hop on a call with Tom Crean, Anthony Edwards' college coach, in about 25 minutes. I don't know how long you were planning on going. Can I piggyback before we get to that exact point, Phil?
Go ahead. Can I piggyback
on something Judd just said? Mm-hmm. I think for this franchise to take the next step, they are eventually going to have to coach Karl-Anthony Towns incredibly hard. That's on Ryan Saunders at some point. I think at some point, somebody is going to have to hold him incredibly accountable. Jimmy Butler tried. That didn't work. It's not going to be Ricky. I think Ricky was brought in for myriad reasons in terms of his leadership qualities, but I don't think it's going to be Ricky who holds Cat accountable. But I'm just saying, if you're a Wolves fan and you think this franchise has a chance in the next couple of years to crack the top eight in the Western Conference, make a playoff run, not get to the point of Cat possibly asking out, I think somebody is going to have to hold him accountable. I can just tell you this, because this is the scoop session. They had all sorts of interest in P.J. Tucker. They had conversations with Houston. They tried to acquire P.J. Tucker. It's not like it was Ricky Rubio or bust. They casted a pretty wide net on myriad, you know, scenarios. And P.J. Tucker was one of those. I think P.J. Tucker would have been an incredible fit. I'm not suggesting that that's completely off the table. I just don't know if I see the match now. I think, you know, pick 17, you know, some of the pieces that the Wolves had before the Rubio transaction, maybe something could have worked with Houston. I'm not to the point yet that Houston is ready to trade P.J. Tucker. Maybe Houston really is willing to try this thing out for a little bit with Harden, with Westbrook, retaining Tucker, some other pieces that they have. But I'm just telling you, I think at some point, somebody is going to have to hold Karl-Anthony Towns accountable. On Rubio, I can just turn a quick corner, Phil. On Rubio, you're right. That is the headline. How is it not the headline? I went back and forth with somebody with the Wolves this morning. I am told, and I'll buy it, right? Journalism 101, why is this person lying to me? But I'll buy it that this was not a PR move. And why I buy that is that they're not going to have fans for the foreseeable future. We don't know when fans will be back in Target Center. So they don't have to worry about, even though it's an issue, a big issue, they don't need to worry about right now selling tickets. That analytically, they dug deep on the Ricky Rubio analytics, that they really like the analytics. It does help that Ryan has a really good relationship with him. If you talk to the people in Phoenix last year, Monty Williams, they will speak glowingly of Ricky. It's not like Phoenix was looking to move Ricky. Phoenix just looked at it and said, okay, we're in a comparable situation like Minnesota, where we have this superstar in Devin Booker. We have him under contract for 4 years. We need to take the next step. Let's go make this move for Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. And the path to Chris Paul entailed, you know, part of that package going to OKC was Rubio. But I can just tell you, Phoenix was not openly looking to move Ricky Rubio. You talk to Monty Williams, others in Phoenix, they will tell you a lot of good things about Rubio on the court, off the court from last season. Sam Mitchell is another guy who loves Ricky Rubio. So you mentioned Judd Tibbs. Not a Rubio guy, but yeah, right. Flip, Ryan, don't forget about Sam Mitchell. Sam Mitchell thinks the world of Ricky.
He makes, and I outlined the statistics on Twitter last night and at the top of the show, he makes young star players better. He is, if you look at some of the numbers and just some of the on-off the court numbers and the plus-minus numbers and lineup combinations, what he did for Devin Booker last year is more than any teammate did in terms of plus-minus, net point plus-minus. And the same for Donovan Mitchell in Utah a couple years ago. So that bodes well for D'Angelo Russell and for Anthony Edwards. And Doogie, my question on Anthony Edwards for you.
Well, let me stop you there real quick, Phil, especially at the end of games. Like, I can see a scenario. I don't say this loosely. I can see a scenario where Rubio actually comes off the bench, that he's not in the starting lineup, but Rubio is going to finish games. So think about end of game lineup. You will have Rubio facilitating, setting up D'Angelo Russell. So it falls in line with what you're laying about Rubio helping Devin Booker. Look for end-of-game situations where Rubio helps D'Angelo Russell.
So on Anthony Edwards, you know, if you just do some, it's what we talked about yesterday. James Wiseman wasn't going to be the pick because he didn't want to be here and he wasn't sharing medical information. LaMelo Ball just didn't make sense to me. I just, like, he can't really shoot that well and he doesn't play great defense, high-maintenance dad. It just didn't seem like a fit from the get-go. There were tons of reports that they were trying to trade on the number one. Did they pick Anthony Edwards because they felt like they had to, or are we to take them at face value and they said he was head and shoulders above everyone else and it was just a no-brainer?
Well, I don't know if I take them completely at face value because they didn't have the full book on James Wiseman. I'll continue to be on record that to me, Wiseman has the highest ceiling of any prospect in this draft. So I feel like Golden State had a fantastic night last night. That if I were the Wolves, I would have maybe found a way.
How about Clay Thompson?
I would have maybe found a way.
Clay Thompson's Achilles begs to differ.
Don't go play pickup games, Clay. No, more pickup games.
In regards to what happened via the draft, you're right about Clay. They still have that $17 million trade exception. They have the mid-level. Their ownership group is willing to go deep into the luxury tax. So they still have a chance. I still think Golden State, even if Clay Thompson is out for the year with a torn Achilles, I still think Golden State jumps into the top eight. So when talking about who comes out of the top eight, who jumps, Oklahoma City comes out of the top eight from this past season. Golden State jumps up. Maybe Houston, if they start making some trades, comes out. Maybe Phoenix jumps up. That's where it's going to be tough for the Wolves this next season to crack the top eight. I just think there could have been a way. Like in New Orleans for a little bit, Boogie Cousins and Anthony Davis played together. But I understand. It's easy for me to say that. You're right, Phil. It's a point I've brought up a bunch, that the Wolves tried to get to Miami where Wiseman was training. They tried to get some FaceTime. They wanted to get the medical book on him. It never happened. So I think it was a really tough pick for them. But I also think when they went out to Malibu, they went out for this sushi dinner. They sat down with Anthony Edwards. They talked to him for hours upon hours. They feel like they got all the answers. They talked to Tom Crean. They talked to his trainer. They talked to other people that know Anthony well, that they feel like they have everything that they need to be, you know, concerned about answered. And they need to have the right support system in place, though. I mean, it's not just Rubio, right? I mean, I still think another vet would help. But I think his ceiling is pretty darn high. Maybe it's not, in my mind, as high as Wiseman's, but, like, to me, with Anthony Edwards, ceiling is Bradley Beal. I think he's got a chance to be that good. Now, the floor, you want to know the floor?
Yeah, what's the floor? Yeah, give me the floor.
It's Dion Waiters. I mean, there's a wide gap there. And truth be told, the answer probably will be somewhere in the middle, right? That he's a good player, but maybe not a great player. Maybe he turns out to be, you know, Wolves fans don't want to hear this probably, but I don't think he got enough credit here. Andrew Wiggins, right? Andrew Wiggins was the rookie of the year, played for, what, four coaches here, did enough to earn a max contract, even though if that's the system that kind of lends itself to that inevitably taking place. But what if Anthony Edwards just ends up as a good player?
He was given a max contract for no good reason. Come on. Hey, Dukes, what's the expectation now and what's next? Because I'm curious what the Wolves think of themselves as far as contending in the coming year when, as you talked about, the Western Conference is still stacked.
Well, I mean, who's going to defend? Who's going to rebound, right? James Johnson, this hasn't been reported yet. James Johnson is heading to Oklahoma City. So that full transaction will include James Johnson's contract to make the money work. So James Johnson won't be here. So when you think about toughness and defense and maybe holding Cat accountable, that won't be, unfortunately, James Johnson. I see them re-signing Juancho Hernan Gomez. He's a restricted free agent, but is he your starting power forward? Don't sleep on Jared Vanderbilt, who they brought in last year in the Denver trade, former McDonald's All-American. Ended up slipping to the second round after 1 year at Kentucky, but I've heard a lot of good things about him. He dominated the G League, so I think he's ready for some NBA minutes, but is Jared Vanderbilt your starting power forward? Probably not. So I think you need to go find a starting power forward. I mean, you know, do you have a chance to go sign a guy like, and this may not wow Wolves fans, but somebody like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson? You know, I mean, is there somebody out there? Is there somebody you can acquire via trade? It's not like they're married to Josh Okogie or Jarrett Culver or some of these other guys. Is there another trade out there where you can bring in some toughness and some rebounding at the four position? On Malik Beasley, I still see a path where he's back. Now, does he end up signing the qualifying offer and then hits unrestricted free agency in a year? Or do they work out a multi-year deal? That remains to be seen. He's in court today, right? Yeah, I'm just still waking up here. But November 19th, he's supposed to be in court at some point today. So we still need to see what takes place on the legal front with Beasley, but I still see a path where Beasley is back. So Beasley, Hernan Gomez, they do have some interest in retaining third point guard Jordan McLaughlin, who ended up starting for them last year. But with Rubio here, with Russell, McLaughlin could be more like a third point guard, but he's a restricted free agent. So they're still trying on some things. This roster is is far from complete.
Doogie, what do you know about the two other first round picks, Leandro Bolmaro and Jaden McDaniels? There's not a whole lot to be. I mean, there's some YouTube scouting videos of Leandro Bolmaro, and he's a 6'7", pretty versatile wing player who can handle the ball a little bit. And Jaden McDaniels, at one point, Jaden McDaniels coming out of high school, and he went to Washington, he was regarded as a future top 10 lottery pick. So maybe the Wolves are getting someone here as a potential steal late in the first round. 6'9", can play a couple different positions, but what do you know about those two guys and anybody else that they were maybe interested in?
I'll go backwards there. So on McDaniels, my understanding is he was in play if they had stayed at pick 17. That's how much they thought of Jaden McDaniels. I know Rosas made a trip out to Seattle at one point, stopped in on a Washington practice. Rosas had the book on McDaniels, but there are some alarming numbers. He led the Pac-12 in personal fouls. He led the Pac-12 where it was up there in technical fouls last year. So there's some attitude concerns. He didn't start. It's not like Washington had a great team. He didn't start games at the end of the year. So you have to wonder why he was thrown, you know, to the bench, not into the starting lineup. But then there were games. You look at the game he played against Zeke Nagy in Arizona late in the season, and he was phenomenal. To me, great lottery ticket at pick 28. Maybe it doesn't pan out, but at pick 28, swing for the fences. So I think there's potential there. On Bolmaro, so I was texting with a Western Conference front office official that I know. He makes a couple trips over to Europe per year. So he has seen Bolmaro in person. His text back to me, frickin' stud. He loves Bolmaro. I talked to Jason Phillippe last night, former European scout for the Pistons and the Blazers. He works for Babcock Hoops. I did a Zoom interview with Jason. Jason really likes him. Jason has seen him in person. He couldn't recall. I talked to him. It was 5 a.m. Italy time, so he was groggy. He couldn't recall if it was 5 or 6 times, but he's seen Bolmaro in person minimum 5 times. Thinks he can play on the ball, off the ball. He's going to stay in Barcelona for another year. So when we talk about the Wolves in all likelihood not having their first-round pick in a year, they could frame it that Leandro Bolmaro is like their 2021 first-round pick. The buyout is reasonable, that he could be over here in a year. So the feedback I've gotten from two people I respect a ton is very positive. They signed a point guard from Kentucky, Ashton Hagans, who I think ceiling-wise, Patrick Beverley. Now, again, a lot of work to get to that point, but he's a defensive whiz. But he butted heads with Calipari in Lexington. There were some red flags there. That's why he did not get drafted. But I think there's some potential there. They did try on the Kansas point guard. That was a surprise. Dotson, that went undrafted, but he ended up with the Chicago Bulls. But I know the Wolves tried on him. They have some interest in a kid from Seton Hall, Miles Powell. I don't know if that would be a two-way contract or an Exhibit 10, but he's a name to keep an eye on.
So, Dukes, what is the next move now as we start the next process? What do you think the Wolves' next move is?
Well, I think it's Hernan Gomez. I mean, I think that'll be the first domino to fall. I think soon thereafter, Beasley, potentially McLaughlin, and then looking for a power forward, you know. And I know that they're not married to you know, specific positions, that they love position flexibility, guys that can guard multiple positions. But I think you need to look at some big forwards that are available, not necessarily in the free agent market. There's not many. I mentioned Hollis Jefferson. You know, Christian Wood is somebody. He was really good for Detroit, 25 years old, so fits their timeline. I don't know, though, if you can get him for the mid-level. It might take more than the mid-level, but Rosas in Houston tried to get him a couple times down there. So that would be a name to keep an eye on. But again, I think he'll have multiple mid-level options. Minnesota is not a free agent destination. So if you're Christian Wood, would you choose to come here to Minnesota over somewhere else? I mean, that would be a slippery slope. I'm not saying no chance, but I just think with the options he'll have, that he probably ends up elsewhere. Might even re-sign in Detroit. But I would look at some of those forwards that are available, and I imagine they'll continue to talk to Houston. Like, I don't think you just stop that dialogue about P.J. Tucker. And we know that Aaron Gordon is on their radar, that Gordon would be a phenomenal fit next to Karl-Anthony Towns. Of all the realistic options that fit next to Cat, I can make a case that Aaron Gordon is the best guy available. I don't know what a trade would look like there. You look at what Covington fetched Houston from Portland, multiple first-round picks. I think Gordon is better than Covington. So I think if you're trading for Gordon, you know where the bar is set now on a transaction like that. It's multiple first-round picks or multiple really good, you know, young pieces or guys that at least have a chance. It might be three young pieces. Maybe it's two picks and one piece. Maybe one pick has some protection. But those are certainly names that I would keep an eye on.
Doogie, so the Timberwolves are sort of just, you know, they're looking at the Western Conference now, and it's loaded, and they've got this built-in cushion last year and this year for sure, where it's like, all right, it's all about cultivation and young players and just putting together this blueprint and seeing what works and what doesn't, right? They're just in experimental mode here as they tear it down last year and build it back up over the past 12 months. When does the accountability clock start for this franchise, for Gerson, for Ryan, and for these young players?
I think it starts the second that the new owner comes in, Phil. And my sense is that is inching closer and closer to becoming a reality. I wouldn't sleep on the estate tax angle with the Biden administration taking over, especially if the Democrats end up with control of the Senate, depending on what takes place in the state of Georgia with those two seats that are open right now. But I think there are a lot of reasons for Glenn Taylor to complete a transaction before the Biden administration takes over. So I think the second the new owner comes in, I don't know who it is. You know, I'm told there's an exclusive negotiating window, maybe with one group right now, but then there's another group poking around. I don't know who it's going to be, but I think in terms of accountability, Phil, as soon as that new owner comes in, I mean, the accountability clock is ticking, right? I mean, what if the new owner wants to bring in his own coach, right?
Yes.
The owner wants to bring in his own, you know, president of operations. Now, Glenn Taylor is working incredibly hard to protect his guys. His guys are Ryan Saunders, Gerson Rosas, Ryan Tanke, Ethan Kasson. You know, so Glenn may end up retaining, who knows, up to 40% or 20%. But Glenn, the headline is Glenn is not going to be the majority owner at some point here in the near future, just the way this thing is trending. So to me, the clock ticks the second that the paperwork is signed. But realistically speaking, Phil, they deserve a little bit of leeway in terms of time. That I think if we see tangible progress this next season, let's say the Wolves are good enough to end up as the 10 seed, right? 9 and 10 seeds will now play. It'll be that play-in tournament, 7, 8, 9, 10. To me, that's a realistic goal. Find a way to crack the top 10. Seed 9, seed 10. Compete for a playoff spot at the end of the season.
Hey, Dukes, if I'm going to buy the Wolves from Glenn for what? $4 billion, $5 billion, something ridiculous? $2
billion? No, $2 billion, right?
$2 billion?
No, less than that. It'll be less than that.
Okay.
It's actually going to be less than what Utah fetched, which was around $166. It'll be, depending again on how much Glenn retains, but I think it'll be in that 1.3 to 1.4 window.
The point is this. There's only so many clauses I'm going to sign. So like, okay, I can't move for 3 years. Okay, I'll sign it. But like, if you're like, and I want to protect Gerson, no. So like, at some point in time, Glenn, if you're going to sell, you have to sell, and it's going to roll the dice with your buddies who might be gone. But I'm not going to sign five clauses that I'm going to keep Ryan and Gerson and keep the team here, and then I'm not going to trade this guy because you like that, you know. So I mean, Glenn, if Glenn's going to pull the trigger on this, He has to accept the fact that after the ineptitude that this poor franchise has had for a long time, the next person might come in and say, I'm going to tear down the arena because they should have in the first place. I'm going to hire my people, and we're going to find a way to win a damn championship.
In Las Vegas.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't sell me the team for a huge price tag and then tell me, but you can't do this and you can't do that until no, I'm going to come in and do my thing. It's not like you won five championships. It just drives me crazy that there's like, what, this Wolves way?
The Wolves way?
I mean, I know.
Yeah, no, you're right, Jug. And Phil, by the way, you mentioned Vegas. If Glenn wanted to fetch $2 billion or north of $2 billion, the team would be off to Vegas or potentially somewhere else. But that Aflalo group, you know, they certainly have some interest. I don't think they're in the mix anymore, but there was some chatter about them having interest in moving the team to Vegas. But Glenn is not going to allow that to happen. But, Judd, you're right. If I'm paying, let's say I'm Jason Levien or I'm Steve Kaplan or I'm Daniel E. Strauss, and I'm cutting this big fat check and I'm now the majority owner, you're not telling me a damn thing about decisions, right?
Right.
Like, I paid you all that money. I will make the decisions I want to make. Now, I will say this. I think Rosas and his front office are incredibly forward-thinking, that there's enough body of work that I wouldn't be, unless you've got, you name the the unbelievable executive, Jerry West, although Jerry is, what, like 80 years old now, the logo, he's just a consultant. But unless you've got this unbelievable executive in your back pocket, there's no way I'd be making a move on the front office. But could I logically see maybe, you know, the coaching spot, as much as I love Ryan, right? Like, if you have a path to getting a big-time coach, that might be a spot that I would keep an eye on. But that's in some ways reckless speculation if you want to play the sounder. But make no mistake, Judd, if I'm buying the team, you're damn right. I'm making whatever bleeping decision right. I want to make, regardless of what Glenn thinks.
Reckless speculation.
Dukes, give us, because I know you have to run and we have to run, so give us like 60 seconds. Four Minnesota basketball kids drafted in the first 41 picks last night. Give us some rapid-fire scoops on that and anything else in your bag.
Wow. Yeah, and Freddie Gillespie, Easteridge High School, played in the MIAC for Carleton before going to Baylor. They probably got lost among the 90 million tweets I sent late last night, but at like 1 a.m. I got the scoop on him heading to the Dallas Mavericks. So he'll join Tyrell Terry with the Mavericks and in the Mavericks organization. He'll have to play in the G League, fight his way up. Or Freddie Gillespie from St. Paul, from Easteridge High School, he'll have a chance to eventually earn some NBA minutes. I'm trying to think what else. Tomorrow night, Gophers, Purdue. I know the Vikings will have a scout there. A few teams will have scouts there. These Friday night games work really well for NFL scouts. Nothing really on the Twins. I will say that I saw the Buster Olney report about Jake Odorizzi having interest from the Blue Jays, the Giants, the Mets, and the Twins. There's some other teams, and I don't think that foursome is completely accurate from what I can gather. The Mets assuredly are checking in on almost every free agent. So, yeah, the Mets is accurate. The Blue Jays have some money to spend. I'm not quite sure on the Giants' interest. And I'll just say this much. On the Twins, while the Twins have interest in retaining Odorizzi, there are at least five, if not six or seven teams that are more aggressive at this moment than the Twins are on the Odorizzi front.
Interesting. Darren Doogie Wolfson, 5 Eyewitness News Sports Team and the Scoop Podcast, Apple, Spotify, and ScoreNorth.com. Inside information about your favorite Minnesota sports teams. Doogie, we'll talk next week, man.
Great stuff, Doogie.
Absolutely. And super happy for Zeke Nagy. Great kid, great family. Pick 22 to Denver. Denver's got such a good front office.
Yes.
Wonderful spot for my guy Zeke Nagy.
It also bodes well because Denver nails all their draft picks. It bodes well that their scouting radar said, yep, this kid can play.
So. And he worked out for them last week in Vegas. So I'm positive he aced that workout. So I'm incredibly happy for all those guys. I spent some time yesterday with Daniel Oturu, him ending up with the Clippers with Amir Coffey, the way the Clippers, you know, helped develop Amir last year. I think the Clippers is a good spot for Daniel. Then you think about Coach K and how tight he is with Pop and Coach K's guy, Trey Jones, ending up in San Antonio. So I think all the Minnesota guys ended up in really good spots.
Yeah. Amen. All right, Doogie. See you, buddy.
Thanks, Doogie.
All right, that's Darren Doogie Wolfson. Also, so he brought up Juan Hernan Gomez, who the Wolves acquired last year.
Movie star. Movie star, yeah. Man. He's shooting film with Sandler, right? The summer?
Yeah.
I think he was with Sandler.
And he had a little breakout with the Timberwolves, 13, 14 points a game, which was like double or triple his career average. And part of the reason why I'm high on a guy like that is because Denver drafted him 15th overall in 2016. And Denver's one of those teams right now. They're kind of like the Rays. You know, they're not like a top franchise, but they're not like a destination for free agents. But when they key in on a young player, it's like, oh, okay, they know what they're doing.
They're smart is what they are.
And then the Wolves grabbed a young player from them. So quick pause, and then let's come back and talk about Karl Anthony Towns, what this draft and night means for him, and accountability. We also have old tweets exposed, Ricky Rubio edition to get to before the show.
The Phil Mackey, Ricky Rubio edition.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
It's going to be great.
With the 28th pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Los Angeles Lakers select Jaden McDaniels from the University of Washington.
Second Husky to be chosen tonight as Jaden McDaniels from his home in Renton, Washington, is selected. We told you eventually that's going to wind up in Minnesota.
The Minnesota Timberwolves select Daniel Oturu from the University of Minnesota.
So Daniel Oturu
in the 2020 NBA draft, the San Antonio Spurs select Trey Jones from Duke University.
It's pretty amazing. Just like we were just talking off microphone, 41 draft picks in the first round and a half, and four Minnesota kids in an international NBA draft. just kind of shows you how far Minnesota youth basketball and high school basketball has come over the years.
Oh, I mean, I grew up in the 80s when, you know, you had guys like Bob Martin and Kevin Lynch and, you know, it was like, okay, this is fine. And now it's just star players.
It is.
Yeah, it changed. When did it start to change? Chris Humphreys? Like, it started to change drastically? Chris Humphreys-ish?
Joel Prisbilla was big time. I can't remember if Joel Prisbilla was a McDonald's All-American or not, but he obviously had like a 12-year NBA career.
That's late and Chris, 90s, right? Prisbilla?
Yep. And then Chris Humphreys comes along in the early 2000s and was a McDonald's All-American set to go to Duke. And then he was probably told by Mike Krzyzewski, definitely come here. We're loaded. We got J.J. Redick. We got all these dudes, so you're probably not going to play. And then he decided, well, I'd rather just start and dominate and be a big fish in a small pond. I think that's the way that played out. But, yeah, then after that, but on the Gophers front, so Daniel Aturu is the first drafted Gophers basketball player since Chris Humphreys in 2004. Think about that for a second. 16 years, no drafted players. Amir Coffey wasn't drafted. Vincent Greer. People are, what about Vincent Greer? He wasn't drafted. He went to Miami Heat training camp.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so I guess credit to Richard Pitino for finally breaking that streak. But then some people look around and say, well, why didn't Pitino get some of these other guys that are NBA players?
That's the thing about it. The in-state talent is so high now comparatively.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about Cat and something that Doogie said about Cat. And that's the fact that Cat, at some point in time, I guess, is going to need to be coached hard and held accountable. And that somebody's going to have to do this for Cat to maximize his success. All right. I've got some thoughts on this one. This was attempted, not well, but it was attempted by Tibbs in some way when he got Butler, right? Like Jimmy Butler was going to come in and show Wiggy and Cat the way, and this is how you work, and this is nose to the grindstone. We breathe basketball, we eat basketball, we sleep basketball, and then we wake up and play basketball. And it went over, pardon my French, like a fart in church. I mean, those guys were like, what? What's going on here? And look, I hold them accountable too. But here's the grand talking point that I'd like to discuss when it comes to Cat. And Phil, this might fall into what you, I think, told Patrick yesterday on the show in saying that I think Cat might ultimately be a great two, but he'll never be an alpha one. I don't know what Doogie is talking about as far as there's going to be this switch that gets flipped at some point in time of holding Cat accountable and coaching him hard, that's going to work. The Ricky acquisition I sort of like because I do think it brings a veteran presence back here, and I think it brings a guy that Cat probably trusts back here, and I think that he can not be an alpha, but Ricky can solidify things in the room for Cat and the younger players, and I think he can help there. But I am beginning to believe that there's not going to be this magic coach or magic player that comes in and gets in Cat's face, and Cat goes, oh, my God, you know what? It's Larry O'Brien trophy time for me. I don't think that happens. I don't think that changing people's personality is necessarily possible unless they want to really badly. So I guess I sort of disagree with Dugs in the sense that I think if you get the next hard ass, I'm going to coach you up and you're going to do what I say, I don't think it's going to work with Cat.
No, I agree with you. I don't think, first of all, Cat's an unbelievable player. He's the most skilled 7-foot player that I've ever seen offensively. And there's a lot of skilled. I mean, KG was an amazingly skilled. He couldn't shoot like Cat. I would take KG as an overall player 10 times out of 10 over Cat, and the mindset of KG and sometimes the abrasive but good leadership of KG. Cat doesn't have the demeanor, the personality, the countenance of a star player. Like, you don't need to tell Tim Duncan, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, like, you don't need to tell those guys how important defense is. And you don't need to tell those guys to stop bitching at officials every other play when you don't get your own way. Those guys are locked in. Those guys are playing both ends of the court on a regular basis. And those guys, even early in their career, Kevin Garnett, are the ones that are teaching other players and showing other players what to do. And so while I think Karl Anthony Towns is a great asset to any NBA team, and he is one of the 15 to 20 best players in the NBA, despite the defensive deficiencies, I think he's destined because of some of the emotional intelligence issues. And he just doesn't have the same sort of killer leader mindset that the top players who win championships have. And you know what? That's okay. Like the quicker that we all sort of come to that realization, and the Timberwolves included, the quicker that we can all get to the solution, which is you got to find someone or a group of players that can sort of rise above that, and whether it's finding an actual Batman and making him the Robin, or whether it's like creating some sort of system where you have a bunch of rugged players sort of around him. I think it's dumb and probably short-sighted to say that he can't be a key figure on a championship team because he's super talented. But is he ever going to be the leader on a championship team? I don't think he can be with his personality. That's my two cents.
I would agree with that, yeah. And I think he's a highly intelligent, thoughtful, smart person. And in some ways in sports, those things hurt you. But I think we also need to get past this whole, if you just find the right guy. I don't think the right guy exists, because I think that you have to want to change, and some people can't change. But back to what you said, it would really be stupid to be like, well, if he can't be that guy, then I guess because look, in my opinion, Wiggins didn't and doesn't enjoy basketball. Okay. Which is a huge starting point problem. Like if you basically say, this is my job and I'm getting paid a lot and I'm really, really good, but I don't care. Okay, it's done. You're not going to win a championship. I don't think, unless you're like the eighth guy on the team. Like there's a lot of things going against you that I think have to be identified quickly. And the quicker that you are not given a max contract, and that the team severs ties and possibly gets something back for you in a trade, the better. But Cat's not that guy. Like I think Cat likes basketball a lot. So I think what we need to see the Wolves do here, and what they probably are trying to do, is settle on what's going to get the most from him. I mean, mm-hmm. D'Angelo Russell was obtained in part why? Because he's friends with Cat, because they can probably play off each other, at least offensively, very well. So I think the Wolves are probably on the right track here. But I just think this whole conversation about there might be this magic elixir that comes in eventually. Look, Jimmy Butler's a great player. And Jimmy Butler probably went about things, or he did, the wrong way. But that experiment, too, needs to be a cautionary tale. So you're not going to bring in the next, you know, in 3 years, it's like, well, the next Butler is going to come down the pike and Cat's going to be 20, what, at that point? 6 or 7, and it's going to change things. It's probably not. So what's going to get you to the point of putting Cat and this franchise in a position to succeed and maximize his capabilities without trying to be unrealistic about what's going to do that?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Jimmy Butler, because you know what? The Miami Heat probably could have used in that series against the Lakers a ridiculously talented 7-footer that can step out, hit threes, and maybe go toe-to-toe a little bit with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is another guy that probably he's right on the border of being good enough to eventually be the number one player on a championship team. But I don't know if he's in that group of like 4 to 6 players that are talented enough on both ends of the court, defense included, and have the leadership abilities needed to be the guy on a team that wins a championship. Right now that list is, I mean, Steph Curry's on that list because it's been proven. Kevin Durant's on that list. LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard. I'm missing a couple.
Is Durant for sure on that?
Yeah, I mean, he's done it with the Warriors.
I'd be curious to see him do it in Brooklyn now.
If he gets James Harden, if they trade for James Harden, Durant is the best player.
Durant's a great player.
Actually, James Harden is a little bit similar. James Harden's like a better, they're different players in different positions, but James Harden's this amazing offensive player, but then like doesn't play enough defense, isn't a great leader. He's just kind of like, he's kind of a loner type personality,
yep.
Right?
Yep, very much.
And so he probably, I mean, it was proven in Houston. Like, they built that team around him, and they knocked on the door for like 3 or 4 years, and they had some injury things, and like Chris Paul got hurt one time. But I guess my grand point is, at any given time, there's like 4, 5, or 6 players that are good enough on both ends of the court and have the leadership capabilities needed to just be the guy that carries a team, and you need talent around you and a good coach and things like that too. And I don't know that Karl-Anthony Towns will ever be in that exclusive group of 4 to 5. I think Karl-Anthony Towns can be in the next exclusive group, which is where Anthony Davis is right now, which is you're an amazing 2. And in the absence of a 1, like you have to sort of build around that 2 and just push it as far as you can, which is what the Wolves are trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if he ever gets a chance, be it with the Wolves or somebody else, to play with a true one, think about that list now. LeBron, all the guys I just mentioned. Kawhi.
Yes, definitely.
It probably results in a championship. Kevin Love is like a lesser version of Karl Anthony Towns. He was a three when he played for with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. But I don't know. It doesn't mean like you got to get rid of him or anything like that. He's unbelievable. You should try to build around him as much as you can while looking for, and maybe Anthony Edwards, maybe he reaches his peak upside and he becomes that one. I guess we'll find out.
Likes football a lot.
He does seem to like football.
He really loves his football.
And rapping.
Play for
he
the Vikings.
Seems to love rapping, too. That's great. It's just what I want to hear out of my number one overall pick.
So Troy Hudson?
Did he rap?
Did he put out the rap record?
Shut him down.
Okay.
Troy Hudson.
All right, see? It's a throwback.
Yeah.
Rubio, Troy Hudson guy. It's a throwback.
Yeah, maybe, you know what? Maybe if you're Anthony Edwards' agent, you might want to tell your client, like, hey, pump the brakes on this I don't really like basketball stuff. Just, like, maybe keep that to yourself until forever.
It does.
Don't ever say that.
I'm sorry, but it concerns me. Like,
me too.
I don't think there's a worse starting point than I'm really good, I can make a lot of cash, but I really don't enjoy the sport that much. That to me is a really, really, it's dicey because it's such a grind, right? Like college hoops is a grind, but you're done fairly quickly comparatively. 82 games, potential playoffs. That's a lot if you really don't love that sport, man.
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant was finding gyms and buses, right? Like he would have that guy driving the bus pull over in front of a gym so he could go work out.
And making a bunch of money doesn't, like, make you love the sport more. It probably makes you resent it more because now you're trapped and you're locked in. Imagine being Andrew Wiggins, man. You got $150 million in the bank and you hate your life.
But you know what? You looked the owner in the eye, square in the eye, and you told him, Glenn, I'm devoted to this sport.
I took issue with what Doogie said, too. He's like, listen, he was rookie of the year and he earned a max contract. He received a max contract.
I cut him off. I couldn't take it.
In fact, the dumbest thing that the Wolves did during that era was they could have let him become a restricted free. That's what restricted free agency is for.
Yes.
The NBA has a mechanism built
so
in
true.
Where if you don't feel like you're ready to give a guy, you're not ready to get married for a max contract, and you kind of reach a stalemate, all right, let's let the market decide. You go hit restricted free agency. We will have the ability to match any contract. Nobody was giving that dude $30 million. So if this doesn't work out with Anthony Edwards in like 3 or 4 years, resist the urge for a dumb max contract. That's what I will say for 2024. Before we get to old tweets exposed, Judd, you have an impromptu pecking order here.
Yes, I do.
A little bonus pecking
order. Yes, I do.
Are you actually ranking these?
I tried here, but I don't know what the specifications of the rankings should be.
Well, Ricky Rubio is making his return to
homecoming.
Right,
but I was like, I ranked them based on impact somewhat, but I also did it based on how they did once they got back. I came up with a list of not 10, but 9 athletes who were essentially stars or at least very good in this town who returned to either the Vikings, the Twins, the Wolves, or the North Stars.
Okay, let's fire
music.
For sure.
All right, I will start at the bottom, which is number nine.
Magic number.
Chris Dolman.
I like it.
Defensive end for the Vikings from 85 to 93, returned for the 1999 season. 96.5 career sacks as a Viking, second all time to John Randall on the Vikings list. Chris Dolman is number 9. Number 8, he played a lot, but I don't know that the impact ultimately was that great upon his return. Brad Johnson, here from 94 to 98, traded to Washington in what became the Dante Culpepper trade. Returned, of course, as the backup to Culpepper in 2005. Took over after Culpepper got hurt and opened 2006 with Brad Childress as his head coach as the starting quarterback. Brad Johnson.
Had his Super Bowl ring in between stops with the Buccaneers, right?
He did indeed. Number 7, Bobby Smith. Top pick overall by the North Stars in the 1978 draft and rookie of the year. Played here into the 83-84 season. Traded to Montreal. Returned in 1990. Actually was a member in his 2 stints of the North Stars Stanley Cup Finals teams, played on both of those teams. He was basically the Kemp's ice cream, Joe Mauer, vanilla, milk toast, really good player before Joe, Bobby Smith at number seven. Number six, our friend, Roy Smalley. Played here, came over from Texas in the Blythe-Levin trade in 1976, played here to 82, was traded early, I think four games into the 82 season, then returned in 85 after a stint with the Yankees and the White Sox, and played through the 1987 World Series championship season. Roy Smalley, number six.
I like it.
Number five, the impact upon return was very low, but the impact of the return was fantastic, at least initially. Randy Moss.
Yeah, and that was 10 years ago on November 1st.
So we just crossed the 10-year anniversary of him being released, I should say.
Okay, yeah. So, but anyway, pull out your 84 jerseys. I'm back. We all thought it was going to be just this great, and the initial scene was great, but after that, it was just a disaster. Randy Moss is number five. Number four, again, it didn't go well, but the return was probably among the best that we've seen in this town just for at least one night. KG.
Yeah.
The game against Washington here that Phil and I watched down in Fort Myers at spring training, you could tell that building was so electric that night, and he didn't score a ton of points. The Wolves, I think, won by 20, but
they were down by like 15 or something early too.
That was so much fun, and it went so wrong. But KG coming back is number four on my list. Number three, Torrey Hunter came back in 2015. Twins had a good year. Retired right after that. That was really smooth comparatively. That was super smooth.
Yeah.
Came back.
He was great.
Didn't go wrong though. The poleheads didn't tick him off, or vice versa. That's number three. Number two, because it worked out so well, and this guy actually played a huge role in the 87 World Series championship. Burt Blylevin, 1970 to 1976, played here. Returned from Cleveland in a trade during the 85 season, which was actually a very substantial trade. Sent a big time prospect by the name of Jay Bell to Cleveland. Won a World Series in 87. I think he pitched here through 88 and then left. But he is number two. And then number one, obvious one, Fran Tarkington. Played here from 61 to 66, traded to the Giants, returned in a trade with the Giants in 1972, played through 1978, and led the Vikings, unfortunately, all defeats to three Super Bowls.
I like it. Man, what a list.
There's a lot of guys, a lot of high-profile guys that have come back here.
Ones.
And we love it. We love a return.
How about Brett Favre returning for the 2010 season? Do we count that after he retired?
No. We don't include Brett. Brett can go back to the Packers. That's fine.
So have the Vikings done anything, like, since he left in 2010? Have the Vikings done anything to like celebrate him or the 2009 season? Like it was a fling and then that was it, right?
I think 2010 was so bad that basically it sullied 2009.
I don't know.
It left its stench on 2009.
I guess I don't know what you would celebrate, a division title. Like, you can't celebrate a
too many
to
men
the Super
in the
Bowl.
Huddle. Let's bring Tahi back and recreate him being the extra man.
He's in his dress
in the
shirt,
huddle.
Just like,
eh. Hey Tahi, run out there, see what happens.
No love for Andrew Brunette yet?
No. No, God bless
him. Todd Richards there?
No. There is, you know what? The one thing that's crystal clear. The Wild's actual impact of, like, potentially great players is so small. I don't even think there is a... I think Gabrick...
Years, man.
I think Marion Gabrick is really the only, what you would consider to be probably, potentially at least, a superstar.
Yeah, I mean, Mikko Koivu was just like a good workman-like player for 12 years or something.
But I mean,
right?
Think about it. Like, who is the great wing in Wild? Oh, man, think about the 50-goal season. Well, who is it?
Yeah, Zucker scored 27 goals once.
Yeah.
Don't get me in trouble. I don't need to get in any more trouble with the
Zuckers
than the Zucker family than I already am, okay?
All right.
Maybe you can make an appearance on her show sometime.
Yeah, maybe.
Talk about all the community work you're doing.
I'm booked.
You and Stella.
Let's get to some old tweets exposed. This is where Declan...
Oh, where to begin?
...goes back into the
this
archives.
Is great.
Judd and I have been tweeting since 2009.
I got a feeling this is all Mackey, and I'm going to really enjoy
it's
this.
It's a lot of Phil Mackey.
That's good. That's perfect.
All right. Hit me with
it. Well, first off, we're going to go in chronological order.
I can explain.
So we're going to start actually right after the 2009 draft night.
Oh, nice.
Okay. I remember where I was on draft night.
Two solid players. Rubio and Flynn. Let's play.
I love how I stole the Paul Allen.
Yeah, 2009. You're clearly influenced. K-Fan Phil.
Weekly appearances.
K-Fan Phil.
I was every Wednesday on the old Duckies and Bunnies show.
Let's play.
Listen, all right. They were both great at that point in their amateur careers.
I'm just saying. I just like how you took the.
So I do remember. See, I was at Jordan Bianchi's house. We were gathered around downstairs watching the draft. Ordered some food, a couple cocktails in, and I remember the Steph Curry thing coming up. Like all of us were. I can't remember who was all there, but like Doogie might have been there. It's like, all right, Steph Curry's probably going to be a good shooter, but like whatever. Like he's too undersized. I remember that being a discussion. So couldn't have been more wrong there.
This is the next one from 2014. Two dudes I'd love to see play with Ricky Rubio and Kevin Love. Nick Stauskas.
Yeah. Three-point shooter from Michigan, I think.
Okay, and Dougie McDermott.
Dougie McBuckets.
Creighton, right?
Dougie McBuckets.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Big McMarch Madness.
Yeah. Game. I will say, okay.
Okay, but in, at the time, yeah, in defense of my take, I can't fall.
So the point I'm making here is that Ricky Rubio, for years, the biggest problem with the Timberwolves is they had this passing and this like magician point guard who couldn't knock his own shot down, and then they didn't have any shooters around him. At one point, they did bring in Kevin Martin, and then Kevin Love started shooting threes. But, like, they never had three-point shooters.
Remember the Kevin Martin shot?
Oh, it was
like
hideous.
Cross-face.
But, I mean, it was damn good.
Yeah. It worked for him.
He could hit
it's
it.
Like it's just, if it works.
And, you know what? That's a scouting tweet. That's fine.
And Stauskas and McDermott coming out of college were great shooters. Right?
I'm just disappointed.
Are those guys even in the NBA anymore?
No,
I don't think they are.
I think Dougie did he go overseas?
Yes,
probably.
He did.
Dougie Buckets went overseas.
Let me just see. Dougie McBuckets, it was a quick run for him. Oh, yeah, he was with the Pacers last year.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Yeah, Dougie McBucket scored 10 points a game with the Pacers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Dude, he shoots 44% from three.
Come on, Mr.
That
NBA.
That take holds up.
I didn't fault you for it.
That okay. take
the first one. The first one I enjoyed. The first one I enjoyed. Okay.
December 20th, 2017. So now we're past the Ricky Rubio tenure here.
Oh, this is when
someone
we're
said, I can't help but think how good this Wolves team would be with Ricky instead of Teague. He would be such a better fit. I disagree with this. Teague has flaws. He's a better overall player than Rubio, and he can make a shot.
For that Tom Thibodeau team, I stand by that take.
Okay. You still think he's a better overall player?
At the time of this tweet, Ricky Rubio was Ricky Rubio is a better player now than he was 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
I stand by that tweet.
Okay.
Now, we're literally splitting hairs. Like, Jeff Teague and Ricky Rubio are, at the time of that, were even like the 15th and 16th best point guards in the NBA.
Sure.
Just different types of players.
Okay. All right.
Interesting.
I got you. And we got more. We're not done yet. Just that we're going to get there. And Judd, you have some too, so don't think you're not off the hook either.
Darn.
March 3rd, 2018. Rubio has never played in a playoff game in a sport where more than half the team make it and individual great players carry a ton of influence.
He's just a guy. Yeah.
He's just a guy.
This is where your relationship with Ricky really had gone south, though.
Yep.
It's true.
And we're getting
now,
a slow build.
Yeah.
The marriage had deteriorated.
Yep.
You were picking on everything by now.
By this point, it wasn't even about Rubio anymore. It was less about Rubio, and it was more about the people that thought Rubio was something that he was. They thought he was a unicorn still. It's like, dude, he's not the 16-year-old in the Olympics or whatever.
It is comparable, I think, to the present day Cousins fight.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not even as
like, you get this.
Cousins.
No, you don't understand. No, I do. I do. But
let's just understand.
Let's just have a conversation instead of you coming off the top rope at me with my Cousins takes.
100%. Yeah.
All right. Who's worse, Wiggins or Rubio apologists? Probably Rubio apologists,
yeah,
because at least Wiggins still has ceiling left July 24th, 2017.
I can't believe this is only 3 years ago that we were having these debates.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Look at me at like 10:39 p.m.
Yeah.
Firing off.
You're fighting
angry.
Realistic Randy. It's Realistic,
oh, Realistic Randy.
You're fighting him.
I'm not fighting him. He seems to be agreeing that those two guys are.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
A couple of neat whiskeys in, I'm sure, for Phil Mackey and the Ricky Rubio takes.
Nothing wrong with that, Dex.
Nothing wrong with that. I stopped from tweeting last night. That's why I did that. All right. November 13th, 2017, Ricky Rubio, one of the single worst shooters in NBA history, is taking twice as many three-pointers per game in his previous high. Doesn't seem like an optimal strategy, but don't you think that the NBA is becoming more of a three-point shooting league, so shouldn't the guy be taking three-pointers?
Not if he can't make them.
But he's improved his three-point shot since leaving Minnesota.
Yeah, but
yeah, this is 3 years ago.
He hadn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this was just so people know, like, the statistics here.
It was bad.
I feel like this is not a terrible showing in Old Tweets Exposed. This is a lot of good stuff worth digging up because this is something
I still like the first one the most. So that's just me personally.
Ricky Rubio's 3-point percentage, 29%. This is with the Timberwolves, 33%, 25%, 32, 30. Then he gets to Utah, 35. Last year with Phoenix, 36%. So he's certainly not JJ Redick, but
right.
He's improving his 3-point.
And he's
percentage.
Not here to shoot this time either.
But he will.
He'll shoot some.
He
right,
knows where he can make them from.
That's good. Yeah. All right, Judd, you have one here from.
I feel like this can't be that bad. No,
it's not horrible. This is from 2011. Ricky Rubio delaying his arrival in Minnesota might have been the best thing he could have done for the Timberwolves.
Ooh, Judd Column here.
And a Judd Column. Let's see if we click. We'll see what happens here when you click.
It's going to go to nothing.
I think it's a dead link.
It's a dead link.
Yeah.
Probably for the best.
You
there.
See, because I was saying that he developed his skills in Spain in those 2 years after being drafted in 2009. This was probably a very well thought out column. Much
lost
like my current column, which you can find at scorenorth.com right now on the return of Ricky Rubio.
Obviously, I self-report on my own tweets because there's
a
lot of
drunk Dex tweets.
All right. This is college Dex for sure. This is 2013.
Loaded.
It's 4 o'clock, so I might have been just a couple in here. Does anyone not remember that Derrick Rose just turned 25? If Grant Hill and Ricky Rubio are able to come back, I'm sure Rose will be just fine. So yes, I did compare Ricky Rubio, Grant Hill, and Derrick Rose all in the same.
You did. What was the Grant Hill Ricky Rubio tie in there? Just so they both hurt their knees or whatever.
Yeah, just superiorly hurt, and so was Derrick Rose.
So was this
the
first Rose torn up knee? The first time?
Yeah, he might have like just come back from the injury, I think.
The playoffs, right? He got hurt in the playoffs.
Yeah,
no.
I think in 2012 he got hurt in the playoffs was when he had his insane year.
And you know what? To validate your take here, did Grant Hill or Ricky Rubio ever drop 50 in a game after their severe knee injuries?
That's right. They did
not. I don't think they did.
They did not. I do have one more Ricky Rubio tweet. This is from 2015.
I love how you're arguing with someone here. Dude, you're something. I can't remember what the rest of it said there.
Yeah, but I don't want to get into who I was arguing with because it could be even more detrimental. All right, last one here. I'll say this about the Wolves. This is from February 11, 2015. If you remotely think Rubio's overrated, you are so wrong.
So he was fighting Phil Mackey at this. So you were one of the apologists.
Were you subtweeting me here?
Maybe.
Yeah,
you were one of the apologists,
dude.
This is pre-first tenure at 1500 ESPN.
Might have been
at PMAC21.
Oh, boy.
I just forgot the handle.
And overrated, this is, okay, one more thing on this Rubio, like, my Rubio hatred, I guess. I don't know. I've always liked him as a human. And I think overrated, underrated is my beef here. And that, I always say the gap between expectations and reality is where all the angst and anger lies. And the reality has always been, and again, he's better now than he was 5 years ago. The reality has always been he is a table-setting point guard who can't shoot really very well. He's got a couple spots now where he can shoot from, and he's found those. And at the time, he barely could convert at the rim. Like, there was a year with the Timberwolves where his shooting percentage between 0 and 3 feet, so at the rim, was 33%. 33%. He would either get blocked or he'd always go in too hard with the underhanded layup, and it would bank off the backboard too hard.
Yes.
And so my point was always, he's certainly valuable, but people think he's this unicorn, and he's not, and that's what my fight was
about.
And
they got defensive about it. Like, super defensive.
And then I would get defensive.
And then you would get drunk and mad at them. And then Dex would jump in and rip you. Right. But he subtweeted you, so you didn't see what Declan tweeted.
And now, listen.
And it became a vicious cycle.
Who would have thought?
And now, I would say 5 more years and wisdom for both Ricky and myself. It's made him a better player. It's made me not better. But, he's a better player.
I think the lesson is very simple. I think the lesson is, and I'll never understand people that irrationally or blindly defend players. It's like all players, for the most part, have flaws, which is fine. But that's the context of a conversation about that player, right? Like, that's the key thing. Like, Kirk. Kirk's the prime. If Kirk made 9 or 10 mil, we'd all be like, this is unbelievable, right?
Right.
But, I mean, that's the conversation. I've never gotten fans who just are like, oh, no, he's great. You don't get it. It's like, okay, that's not the conversation.
Or you take the one outlier and say, well, what about that Saints game? And to which I say,
you're right.
Yeah, like, dude, he was amazing in the second half of that game. He is a, let's say, like an average quarterback who played the best game of his career.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened. Nick Foles did that with the Eagles in the Super Bowl and in the NFC Championship
and then trolled the Vikings by doing the skull on the field.
Yep. By the way, Ricky Rubio's effective field goal percentage since leaving Minnesota, 46%. In Minnesota, it was 39%.
Ooh.
So he has made a significant jump in his shot.
Oh, Declan's upping the expectations. Here we go again. Here we go again. Rubio's great.
Raise the expectations so you can
Hall of Famer
punch him down
that's
later,
right?
All right, that's a wrap on this Wolves Draft Night recap episode of Mackie and Judd. Be sure, again, to check out our daily Vikings conversations on the Purple Daily podcast. And if you haven't already, check out our secondary, it's secondary only because we launched it second, not because the quality is any less, but YouTube channel, youtube.com/ScoreNorthMN. And we'll see you guys for Action Movie Rewind Friday.
Oh, I got it.
Die Hard 2.
Do I have thoughts?